Out of all the people you know, who frightens you most? Who are you scared of? Your boss? The people you work with? Some lad in your neighborhood? The government? Who are you afraid of? This psalm, Psalm 56, is all about the fear of man. It's all about being afraid of other human beings. And in this psalm, David says, I'm not going to be afraid of other human beings. He says, I refuse to be frightened by other people. That's the main theme of this psalm. It becomes a little chorus in the psalm. Verse 3, when I am afraid, I put my trust in you, in God whose word I praise. In God I trust, I shall not be afraid. What can flesh do to me? And then, again in verse 9, second half of the verse, this I know, that God is for me, in God whose word I praise, in the Lord whose word I praise, in God I trust, I shall not be afraid. What can man do to me? That's the theme of the psalm. In God I trust, I shall not be afraid. What can flesh, what can man do to me? David is insistent, I shall not be afraid of other human beings. The only problem is that when I read those words, I think to myself, but surely there are times when any of us would be afraid of other human beings. Surely there are situations where any of us would tremble and feel frightened. Let me read to you a little bit from that same news report I read to you earlier from Nairobi. Elizabeth Muthona, an employee of Nakumat, a supermarket inside the mall, watched solemnly Saturday afternoon as more people fled the area, some with bleeding wounds, some carrying their kids in their arms. She too had fled moments earlier. For several hours she hid herself in a cardboard box, holding her breath as gunmen walked through the store. I heard the gunshots and we started running into the store and we hid in a carton box, said Muthona, in a quiet and shaking voice. The gunmen came inside the store, but they didn't find us. She paused, then added, I didn't expect this to happen. There was so much security inside the mall. A woman, hidden inside a cardboard box, hearing the footsteps of these terrorists as they stalk around the shop, hearing the gunfire, knowing that if one of them kicks aside the box with their foot, that she'll be the next victim. Surely she must have been afraid. Surely anybody would feel afraid in that circumstance. It's natural. Natural physiological reaction. That we feel sick. That our stomach churns. That we shiver. That we tremble in a situation like that. It doesn't have to be a situation as dramatic as that. When as a teenager, I was summoned into the study of our head teacher. I shivered. And it was natural that I should do so. I was just a lowly pupil in the school, and here was the man who was running the school, the man with the authority. It's natural to feel afraid in that situation, to feel afraid of him. It's natural that children feel afraid when their parents are angry. There's a sense in which I want my children to be afraid when I'm angry with them. If one of my children has been behaving badly and I show my anger and I raise my voice, then I want to see my children trembling. And it's natural that they should do so. For most of you, when you hear those dread words on the lips of your dentist, open wide, you feel some sort of shiver down your back, especially as you hear the drill beginning to vibrate. Isn't it natural to feel afraid? Could anybody really say, I'll never be afraid of anybody? I don't think that is what David's saying. I don't think he's saying that he'll never tremble. He'll never shiver. He'll never feel his heart beat a bit faster. He'll never feel nervous. What he's saying is this. He's saying, I am never going to let fear of other people stop me from doing what's right. I'm never going to let fear of other people push me into doing what's wrong. I'm never going to let fear of other people control me and dictate my behaviour. You can think of a simple example. You've got a lad in school, and he goes around with a gang of other lads from the school, and these lads get into mischief. Maybe it's shoplifting. Maybe it's vandalism. Maybe it's stealing cars. Whatever it might be. And they're caught. And this lad's dad is summoned to the police station where his son is in a cell. And he's furious. When he gets his son home on bail, he lets it go. And he says, why? Why on earth? Why on earth were you involved in those things? You know all we've taught you. You know what's right and what's wrong. Why? And the lad says, well, I was afraid. I was afraid of the others. He was afraid of what they'd say if he refused to get involved. He was afraid of what they would do. When David says, I shall not be afraid, he means I am never going to be like that. I am never going to let my behaviour be dictated by fear of other human beings. Now that is an important lesson to learn. That you can't afford to let fear of other people dictate your behaviour, overrule your conscience. You can't afford to let fear of other people push you into doing things that are wrong or steer you away from doing things that are right. David learned that lesson through bitter experience. If you look at the heading to the psalm, you'll see that this was the psalm he wrote when the Philistines seized him in Gath. That was the situation in which he learned that lesson. And we're told about it in 1 Samuel chapter 21. It all happened shortly after David had had to escape from Saul's court. He had been one of the most notable, perhaps the most notable young man in the court of King Saul. He was the young hero who had defeated Goliath. He was the adored favorite of the people wherever he went, the women chanted that David has slain his 10,000s. He was the celebrity of the day, and Saul was bitterly jealous of him. And Saul was the king. Saul had power. And Saul, who was half mad, was paranoid, watched David day by day, and his hatred of David became greater and greater, and his threats against David became more and more open. And David became conscious of the fact that this vicious, hating king was watching him all the time, was scheming all the time against him. And the day came when Saul's own son, Jonathan, told David, "You're going to have to escape from this court because my father is set on killing you, and he will do it." And then we read this in 1 Samuel chapter 21, verse 10. "And David rose and fled that day from Saul and went to Achish, the king of Gath." David is in a panic. David, his courage has collapsed. All he can think about is Saul and how powerful Saul is, and how determined Saul is to kill him, and the fact that Saul is able to reach him wherever he is, anywhere in the land of Israel. Saul's got his agents, his officials everywhere. And David says, I've got to find somewhere where I'll be safe. But he can't think of anywhere. And then suddenly it comes to him. There's one place where Saul won't be able to lay his hands on me. I'm going to go to Gath. I'm going to run to Gath. Gath is the capital city of the Philistines. The enemy with which Israel is at war. Goliath came from Gath, remember? But David, in his panic, says, "If that's the only place I'm going to be safe, that's where I'll go." He thinks that the king of Gath will be delighted to receive him. Because after all, it means he's turned sides. He's turned against his own people. The Philistines think of David as the most powerful warrior the Israelites have got. The Philistines will be delighted if they can boast, "Hey, well, he's come over to our side now. He's with us now." David, in his fear of Saul, runs away and joins Israel's enemies. It's so obviously the wrong thing to do. It's a crazy thing to do. It's a wicked thing for David to do. And he does it out of fear. He does it because he's so frightened of Saul. He's letting down all of God's people, isn't he? Remember how David had been anointed by Samuel? "I've chosen you as king over my people. You've got to defend them. You've got to strengthen them. You've got to encourage them. You've got to be loyal to them." And now David is turning his back on those people who have trusted him. Think of the discouragement that's going to spread through all the Israelites when they hear that their David has gone over to the Philistines. But David isn't thinking about that. David isn't thinking about how he's letting down God's people. All he's thinking about is Saul and the danger he's in from Saul. He's dishonoring God. He's bringing such dishonor on the name of God. David wasn't just a warrior. He was the harpist. He was the psalmist. and all those songs he had sung about the greatness of God, about God's power to defeat his enemies, about God's power to keep his people safe. And now the Philistines are going to be saying, this God that David sung about couldn't protect him. He had to come to us. David's admitting that our gods are the only people who can keep him safe now. What dishonor he's bringing to God. But he's not thinking about that because he's so scared. He's just frightened of people. He's frightened of Saul. He's threatening his own future usefulness. The Lord, through Samuel, has told him about what his destiny is to be, that he's going to reign over Israel. He's making it extremely hard for that prophecy ever to be fulfilled, isn't he? Will the Israelites ever trust him again when they know that he turned his back on them and went off to join their enemies? And he's putting himself in greater danger. That's why I say what he did was crazy. He's running away from Saul because he thinks of Saul as a dangerous enemy. And who does he run to? He runs away to the Philistines, who are the enemies of all Israelites. He says, I can't trust Saul. And so he runs to people who are about as untrustworthy as you can get. Does he really think that in going to the Philistines, he's going to people he's safe with? We talk about jumping out of the frying pan into the fire. Isn't that exactly what David is doing? In his panic, in his desperation to get away from one frightening situation, from one frightening man, he jumps straight into an even more frightening situation, or even more dangerous situation, right in the camp of the Philistines, who've got every reason to distrust him and every reason to hate him. And that's exactly what happens. Look what it says in verse 11. And the servants of Achish said to their king, Achish, king of Gath, is not this David the king of the land? Didn't the Israelites sing to one another of him in dances? Saul has struck down his thousands and David his 10,000s. The moment that David has arrived there in Gath, and the moment that the king of Gath has given him asylum, the king of Gath's courtiers begin to stir up opposition to David. They begin to whisper to their king that David shouldn't be trusted. They begin to remind the king of the fact that David was the great warrior of Israel. They begin to poison the king's mind against David. David ran away from Saul's court because he knew that people were whispering about him, planning, conspiring against him, spreading lies about him, poisoning Saul's minds. And now he's in the court of Achish, and it's all happening all over again. Only worse. At least in Saul's court he had a Jonathan to stand by him, somebody he could trust. There's nobody like that in this court. He's put himself in greater danger. And he's in even more of a panic. What does he do when he realizes that Achish is beginning to look at him with suspicion, when he realizes that all these people are plotting against him? He changed his behavior before them and pretended to be insane in their hands. He realized that he was in their hands. And he thought, there's only one way in which I can stop them from thinking of me as a threat. I'm going to pretend to be insane. He made marks on the doors of the gate. He let his spittle run down his beard. And then Achish said to his servants, behold, you see, the man is mad. Why then have you brought him to me? Do I lack madmen that you've brought this fellow to behave as a madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house? And Achish let David go. First of all, David is frightened of Saul, so he runs off to the Philistines. And now he's frightened of the Philistines and has to, or chooses, this humiliating way of escaping from them. Again, it's horrible. This man is God's chosen king over his people. This is the man who is supposed to be the representative of God on earth. This is the man who is anointed with the Spirit of God so that he can show people the glory of God, so that he can sing the praises of God. And here he is, behaving like an animal, behaving like a rabid dog, pretending to be insane, gibbering and pawing at the doors and dribbling. It was just so obviously the wrong thing to do. Again, he was letting down God's people. What's it going to do to the Israelites when they hear that their great hero has turned into this dribbling imbecile? He's dishonouring God, whose representative he's supposed to be. Cain, he's threatening his future usefulness. People can say afterwards, well, he went loopy once, he had that complete breakdown once. Could we ever trust him again to command our forces? And actually, he's putting himself in greater danger once more. As it happened, in God's providence, Achish said, oh, we're not going to bother with him, just send him away. Achish could have reacted completely differently. Achish could have said, oh, just chop his head off, get rid of him. He's no use to us, he's no use to anybody. That would have been perfectly in character for a Philistine king. Again, in his fear, David is putting himself into greater danger. Well, thankfully, God protected David against the consequences of his own folly. David was allowed to leave Gath. And better than that, David was restored to a better and wiser mind. And David lived to write this psalm, Psalm 56. And in this psalm, what does he say? He says, I've learned never to give in to fear of other people. I've learned that I must not, I shall not be afraid. I shan't let my fear of other people dictate my behavior. David had learned that once you give in to fear of other people, you just get yourself into deeper and deeper trouble. That's what he learned in Gath. You see, there's no stopping point along that road. Having once run away to Israel's enemies, well, then the next stop, the next logical step, when they're threatening you, is to pretend to be insane, if that's the only way you can escape from them. Once you allow fear of other people to overrule wisdom and righteousness and God's honour, where do you stop? You know, the lad I'm talking about. Okay, so others in the gang are shoplifting. And because he's afraid of them, because he's afraid of what they'll say, he goes along with that. But then they want to push him into stealing cars. And for him, it's become the factor that dictates everything. What will others say? What will others do? And so he gets into car theft. And then they start talking about planning a burglary. And to break with his pattern of behavior now, and to say, no, I'm going to stand up against them. He's not going to do it, is he? He's going to go along with that next. Because he's afraid. He's got more reason to be afraid now than he had at the beginning. And then they say, well, on the next burglary, we're going to carry guns. Step after step, he's going to let the fear of human beings dictate his behaviour. It's that fear that has wrecked so many lives. A girl from a Christian home. Why does she dress in that immodest way? Because she's afraid of what her friends will say. She's afraid of the laughter, the mockery. It's not that she feels comfortable dressed like that. She doesn't. She doesn't like what she sees in the mirror when she looks at herself dressed like that. But she can't bring herself to stand up against her friends to say, I don't care about them. And then when they want her to go to their drunken parties, she can't bring herself to say no. Because she's afraid of them and what they'll say. And when they all start sleeping around, she can't bring herself to say, well, I'm going to be different. Because she's afraid that she'll be called frigid and that she'll be treated with contempt. She can't. She's frightened. So much of the sordid and wrong behaviour that people get involved in. It's driven by fear of other people. David says in this psalm, I am not going to go down that road again. I let fear drive me into the hands of Achish. I let fear drive me into pretending to be a madman. I am not going to go down that road again. He says, verse 3, when I am afraid, I will put my trust in you. Whenever he feels that fear begin to set in, whenever he begins to feel that he's being driven towards things that are unworthy or ungodly, and he says, at those times, I'm going to put my trust in you. Instead of fearing other people, I'm going to be trusting you. Why are we afraid of human beings, other human beings? Because other human beings can be very nasty. Other human beings can hurt us an awful lot. David gives us a picture of the human beings that he was afraid of, Saul, the Philistines. They're insistent. Be gracious to me, O God, he says in verse 1, for man tramples on me. That's the NIV translation. And it's again in the first line of verse 2 as well. My enemies trample on me all day long. More accurately, it would be that they pant after me. They harry me. They hound me. These aren't people who are going to take no for an answer. They're after David. They're pushing him. They're following him. They're panting after him. Either to get him to do what they want or to swallow him up. And they're cruel. All day long, an attacker oppresses me. They want to make David hurt. They want to oppress him, to crush him down. And they're confident. He says at the end of verse 2, many attack me proudly. They're so sure of themselves. And that's intimidating, isn't it? That the people who are threatening David, they're so confident, they seem so undefeatable, so irresistible, they seem so much in control of the situation. And they're unrelenting There's never any let up for David. He emphasizes that in three places. In verse 1, all day long an attacker oppresses me. Verse 2, my enemies trample on me all day long. Verse 5, all day long they injure my cause. They're unrelenting. And they're unscrupulous. Verse 5, all day long they injure my cause. Or as the footnote correctly has it, they twist my words. They can do that. They can take up David's words and they can twist them into meanings that David never intended. And they can use that against David. There's no way of defending yourself against that. There was no way that David could defend himself in Saul's court when people started twisting his words and poisoning Saul's mind. There was no way he could defend himself in Achish's court when people there started doing the same thing. They're unscrupulous. They're scheming. You see that in verse 5. Again, all their thoughts are against me for evil. It's not just that these people spontaneously, on impulse, do nasty things. They plan the nasty things that they can do to David or to you. And they're determined. Verse 6, they stir up strife, they lurk, they watch my steps as they've waited for my life. They're determined, we're going to get David in the end. We're going to get David in the end. And we're going to lurk, we're going to watch until we do. David had people like that around him. When he was in Saul's court, when he was in Achish's court, he had people who were harrying him, people who were utterly cruel and vindictive after him. He had confident people who were sure that they could get him. He had unrelenting people who used all their energy with this one goal in mind, to nail David. He had unscrupulous people who would use any method to get him. He had scheming people who were just planning all the time how they were going to hurt him. You had determined people, people who were never going to give up until they had destroyed him. That's why David was tempted to fear. That's why David felt he had no option but to run off to Gath. That's why he felt he had no option but to play the madman. Because there were people like that. And we've got people like that too. And naturally speaking, we're frightened of them. It may be the gang of lads who are terrorizing the neighborhood. And who are bullying, harassing that Down syndrome girl down the road. They're making her life and the life of her family a misery. So far all they've done is look at you and snigger as you walk past. Just watching you when you walk down the road. But that's enough. That's enough to make you shiver. But you know that if you go to her defense, or if you report them to the police for what they've done to her, you know there's no telling what they might do to you. They might set fire to your house. They might knife you when you're coming home one night. If you're a woman, they might rape you. It could happen. There are people like that on our estates. Can you say, I'm not frightened of them? Or when I am, I'll trust the Lord. Of course, it needn't be people like that. It can be people much closer to you. Your boss. If you don't lie for him when he tells you to, he can make your life a misery. your classmates, if you don't join in their sick entertainments, they can turn around and bully you. It can be your academic supervisor. If you don't work according to his standards, corrupt standards, he can ruin your career. Colleagues can ostracize you, treat you as an outcast. People at the town hall can harass you. Your unconverted relatives can hurt you perhaps worse than anybody else can if you refuse to compromise what you think is right. Your children, your unconverted children, can threaten to withdraw their love from you. They can humiliate you. Many Christian parents who are more afraid of their own children than they are of anyone else, because they know what their children can do to them. Humanly speaking, for nearly all of us, there will be people who frighten us. People who we know can harm us, can hurt us. People who we would describe in the same sort of words that David uses in this psalm. David has been there. Saul, the Philistines, he has found these people frightening. And fear has pushed him into doing these wrong and foolish things. And now he says, I'll never again let people like that stop me from doing what's right. I'll never again let people like that frighten me into doing what's wrong. Verse 3, when I'm afraid, I will put my trust in you. Verse 11, in God I trust, I shall not be afraid. It's not that David is saying, somewhere I'm going to call up reserves of courage. I've got what it takes. I can stand up to the bullies. No, he says, at those times of fear when I could give way, at those times of fear when I could run away from my duty, at those times of fear when I could cave in and lower my standards, at those times I'm going to set my mind on you, O God. And instead of thinking about the bullies, instead of thinking about the frightening people, I'm going to think about you. The answer to fear is not summoning up some innate courage. The answer to fear is having a high view of God. Seeing how great God is. Seeing how wonderful God is. Having a heart and mind filled with the thought of God himself. That's David's answer. He says, when I'm afraid, I'm going to turn my thoughts to you. I'm going to remember you and I'm going to trust you in those situations. What is there about God that will strengthen David, that will give David courage at those times? Let me list five things. Firstly, the fact that God has given him promises. He says in verse 4, in God whose word I praise, in God I trust. And he says it again in verse 10, in God whose word I praise, in the Lord whose word I praise. There are words that God has spoken. Great definite promises. And David says, I'm going to praise those words. At those times when the enemies are closing in, and at those times when I'm finding myself shivering and panicking, I'm going to remind myself of your promises, O God. I'm going to praise those promises. I'm going to remind myself of how wonderful those promises are. That's the first thing. God has given him promises. And God's promises don't fail. God doesn't break his promises. Every one of them is rock solid. Secondly, he can say, God knows about him. Verse 8, you've kept count of my tossings. Oh, David's had many sleepless nights. thinking about Saul and what Saul's planning to do, thinking about the Philistines and what they're planning to do. He's been tossing and turning all night. And God has been watching him all through those nights. God's kept count of every time he's turned over from one side to another. God knows David so tenderly, so intimately. There's never been a moment when God hasn't been watching him, when God hasn't been there in his bedroom, looking over him. God knows about him. And more than that, thirdly, God cares about him. Verse 8, you kept count of my tossings, put my tears in your bottle. What would you store in a bottle? Precious things. Precious ointment. David saying, oh God, you store up my tears. Every one of them is precious to you. You don't let any one of them just fall to the ground and be forgotten. You care about me. You know when I've been crying. You know when I'm hurting. You know every tear that trickles down my cheek. And you care about everyone. God isn't going to hand David over to the people who hate him as if God doesn't care. God cares about David. And then the whole psalm tells you something else. God listens to David. Why have we got this psalm? Because it's a prayer. Be gracious to me, O God, it starts. This is a God who listens when his people cry to him. Whether he's in Saul's court or whether he's in the court of Gath, he's got a God who listens. And who listens with a gracious, merciful ear. There is no situation in which God does not listen to his people. It doesn't matter how close the enemies are, whether they crowd around or not. They can't stop David from talking to God, and they can't stop God from listening. You know, you can buy on the internet a mobile phone jammer to be used in railway carriages when you're sick of hearing people chattering around you on their mobile phones. Just switch it on surreptitiously and it'll block all the mobile phone signals. Don't rush out and buy them. I think they're illegal to use within the UK. But there's no little bit of electronic equipment that stops a man from speaking to God and God from hearing those signals. David is confident that he's got a God who can listen to him, who hears him, and who listens graciously. God has given David promises. David, remind yourself of those promises. God knows about David. David, remember that God knows you and knows everything about you. God cares about David. David, be confident in that, that God is caring for you now, every moment. God listens to David. David, be sure that he's listening to you now. And best of all, most comprehensive of all, God is for David. Verse 9. Then my enemies will turn back in the day when I call. This I know, that God is for me. All right, I've got all these people against me. My boss is against me. My colleagues are against me. My children are against me. My neighbours are against me. My supervisors against me. The government's against me. The people at the town hall are against me. The people in the education authority are against me. The head teachers are against me. God is for me. Which would you rather have? All those people for you and God against you? Or God for you with all those people against you? Better to have God for you than all the rest of the world beside. If you've got God for you, what does it matter if you've got the world against you? What does it mean in practice to be able to say, God is for me? Do you want me to apply that verse? Well, I don't. I'm not going to. Because I don't need to. Because Paul, the apostle, has already done it for you. Romans 8 is Paul's great exposition of God is for us. If God be for us, who can be against us, says Paul. And then he spells out all that that means. And what does it mean? It means this. God works all things together for good. For the good of those who love him, who are called according to his purpose. God takes up everything that those enemies do, everything they plan, and he uses them for our everlasting good. He uses them to shape us to be like Christ. He uses them to fulfill his great everlasting purposes for us, to prepare us for glory. You know that great chain that you've got in Romans 8? That God set his love on us from eternity. And then he predestined us to become his sons. And then he called us by the gospel. And then he justified us. And then he glorified us. But how? What means does God use to glorify us? Everything, says Paul. Every single thing that happens to us, God uses to bring us into glory. And high on the list of things he uses are the attacks that our enemies bring against us. They do everything they can to hurt us. They do everything they can to harm us. And God turns it round and uses it to make us like Christ and to prepare us for glory. That's what it means to have God for you. It means that you've got a God who has promised, who has sworn that every single hurtful, harmful thing that anybody ever does to you will work for your good, will increase your everlasting happiness, will bring you nearer to Jesus Christ and his image. God is for us. Paul preached it, but David knew it before him. Saul, oh, he did David so much harm in human terms. But every bit of the harm that Saul did David has worked out for David's everlasting joy. The Philistines tried so hard to hurt David, but all their attacks on him have worked out for David's everlasting joy. And through Christ, that will be true for you if you're a Christian. I don't know who's trying to hurt you. I don't know whether there are particular people where you work who are harassing you and trying to frighten you. I don't know whether you've got a boss who's trying to intimidate you. I don't know if you've got neighbours who are trying to make your life a misery. I don't know if you're just frightened of the government and the way that the government is trying to harass us more and more as Christians. But I do know this, that God is for us. And that whatever anybody does to us, God will work it for our everlasting joy and his everlasting glory. That's the promise. David learned that. That's why we don't fear other people. They can't harm us in the end. What can men do to us? We've got man against us, yes. We've got God for us.